When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I didn't tell you before the recording, Chris, but I was slightly fractious because I thought the John the Juice around the corner had got my order wrong and omitted my avocado and jalapeno sandwich for the morning. That's the kind of thing I eat in the morning. But it turns out I've looked into the bag and they actually haven't. So I've got a coffee, I've got a jalapeno sandwich, and I'm ready to go for Wednesday.
You're living the London dream, aren't you?
I am.
What more could you want?
Well, it's in lockdown, I've sort of got involved with the old Joe and the Juice, what would you call it? A Joe and the Juice app. It's basically an app that basically you can order food and then pick things up contactless. That's an absolute treat for me. I might continue using it. I don't even like Joe and the Juice usually. It's a coffee shop that constantly plays really loud music, so you can't really concentrate or talk to your friends.
I can't work out how you're pronouncing that. Joe and the Juice. Joan and the
Juice. Yeah, Joe and the Juice. I think it might be New York. I think the American listeners may be more off here with it, but there was a few that turned up about 5 years ago. And it's just so loud. I only ever went in there because they used to do a licorice latte, and I love licorice.
Oh, well, you're lucky. So you've got that and tapioca shops the world over on every street of Soho.
We're getting back on top.
My resounding memory of Soho in London is just tapioca. Bubble tea. Yeah. Not tapioca, bubble tea shops every turn.
People are selling bags of flour, like floury tapioca for you. Ooh, delicious.
Well, while you've got your jalapeno sandwich and coffee and various things, I am drinking. I'm not drinking coffee today, you'll be pleased to hear. Celebration.
Oh, my God. Oh, no caffeine for Chris.
I am drinking a really quite awful energy drink called G-Zone, or just Zone. I can't work out what character that is. And a lot of people have been telling me about this, like, you should try this drink, Chris, on account of the weird English on the front. It's kind of a new up-and-coming energy drink that's on the shelves with Red Bull, and it describes itself as digital performance energy. Digital performance. And they've got this really, like, this little bit of artwork on the front underneath the logo that describes the sense of immersion of being in the digital performance zone. And it's just like a little graph. I've got some arrows pointing downwards and a little circle. And it just says, sense of immersion right here. Suffice to say, tastes awful. Won't be drinking that ever again. I don't feel a sense of immersion, and I don't feel any digital performance. There is a little bit of English on the back as well that says, play, study, work, zone assists all the digital culture lovers to enjoy sense of immersion. Are you a digital culture lover, Pete?
I just like the fact that you just almost think that they've kind of fallen at the first hurdle. Obviously, Red Bull, ubiquitous monster. I'm trying to think of the other big, what's the third big energy drink brand, like the big thick cans. I can't remember now. Relentless.
Relentless
is quite big.
Oh, Relentless. Yeah, that's Match. Not made it over here. Match is quite good.
So all of these are quite parochial, the ones that you're flirting with, because they clearly just haven't, they're obviously got that kind of decorative English on them. So they don't really care whether they go outside of Japan with their digital energy nonsense.
It's quite an interesting one because obviously the energy market, energy drinks market in Japan is pretty big, often referred to as genki drink, genki dorinku, and because it makes you feel genki. But obviously a lot of people here do work like really long hours into the morning. And so, yeah, it's a pretty big market for energy drinks. And it's not uncommon to like walk down the street and there's just people handing out Monster Energy cans for free. It's like part of a promotion, like Monster Energy. Just go around the streets of Tokyo with like a wagon handing out Monster Energy drinks, which is, I don't know if that's good or bad. Good in the sense, free drinks. Bad in the sense, it's not at all good for your health. And just drinking this Zone Digital Performance, I just felt awful. Like I,
what's the classic kind of what's that classic little V vitamin sort of the little brown bottle with the yellow top, very small glass bottle you see all over Japan. That seemed to be the original kind of energy drink for the Japanese, didn't it?
Yeah, there's a few. There's Decavita. Do you think of Decavita?
Decavita, yeah, I think I'm thinking of that. Yeah, because haven't they done like a kind of Yeah, it's not too bad actually. It's not too sweet. It's a bit like a slightly more syrupy Red Bull, but it does give a little pep in your step, so to speak. But like, I got a lot of tweets during the week, or maybe even last week actually, about the mixture of a similar energy kind of drink with Coolish. They've got a new flavor for Coolish, so there's a lot of people tweeting me about it. They've been quite. You've been talking about it on the old Lotte Coolish Twitter website bit on their account. I'm melting down, Chris. It's really warm here. I want a Coolish. They've created a new flavour. They're calling about it, and they just don't want to send me any.
Poor old Pete. But I mean, are in Japan, if next time you're over, though, ladies and gentlemen, if you go into a convenience store, there's a fridge like by the front door usually, and in it is just loads of little bottles of energy drinks. Really, it's quite a big market. They kind of make them look almost like medical products, don't they? Even Decavita looks kind of like some sort of medical medicine potion.
A bright yellow one as well that tastes really, really funny. And also
that's Decavita.
Is that Decavita, right? Well, the one with the one
CC
with
vitamin.
What's the one that vitamin CC? That might be the brown one I'm talking about. Either way, like there's one that's there's like a whole range of them that are supposed to help you with hangovers, and the Japanese swear by them. I think we've spoken about them before, and they've got a picture like a little cartoon liver on the front, which is very adorable. But you're supposed to drink them before you go out and get pissed.
Yeah, it's got some sort of root in it, and I remember before we went out for our Osaka video shoot, we drank a few of those, didn't we? To see if they would work. We were going to film it and put it in the video, but I think the end result was they didn't work. We both had a really bad hangover the day after the Osaka video. And since then, I just vowed never to drink them again. Just a waste of money.
Your Moscow mules. Look, nothing can defeat a Moscow mule. They're way too strong. You've got to leave them alone.
It's very true. Moscow mules all round. I just love a Moscow mule. Good old bit of vodka. But this week, Pete, it's a very special week, and I want you to guess why it is a very special week, because it's a special week.
You have had all of your toes removed.
Where did that come from?
I don't know. I'm in the dark. I've got nothing to work from.
It's May. Come on. You can work it out. It's a very special week. It's May. What happened in May many years ago?
It's the 5-year anniversary of me losing all of my scissors dressed as Edward Scissorhands. No, that's October. That's Halloween. I have no idea.
Well, it's the 3-year anniversary of our friendship, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Did Facebook remind you? Is this the anniversary show?
Did Facebook remind me? I know very well the first day we met, because I looked it up in my Gmail account where you sent me an email. Apparently, May 25th.
You delete all of my emails apart from the first one so you don't forget my email address. That sounds like you've gone looking for my email address and you've found one email because that's the only one you can stand to have in your email box. How dare you?
Does sound like the sort of thing I would do. Well, I remember, because for May's a big month for me, because I remember it's the month we filmed Natsuki the movie. And while I was thinking about that the other day, I thought, wait a minute, Pete Donaldson, we met him in the same shoot while we were doing it in London. And I typed into my old Gmail, Pete Donaldson, I typed in your email address. And apparently on May 11th, you followed me on Twitter. I think you followed me on Twitter. And then on May 25th, I got an email from you.
Was it even following you on Twitter?
won't even follow me until then. And then May 25th, I've got an email that says, hey, man, I love your videos. If you've got 5 minutes at some point, I'd love to interview you and Natsuki while you're here. We're based in Soho. And it says underneath, sent from my iPhone, apologies for brevity. Brilliant. And then
I will never moments later, for brevity again.
Moments after that, there was another one saying, Natsuki, damn, sorry, autocorrect. Because in your first email, you'd misspelt Natsuki as Natorki. I'd love to interview you and Natorki.
Well, look, if you ever find Natorki, because that was the main reason for me to getting in touch as a radio DJ to have a chat. I mean, this is like our origin story.
It is.
I mean, it's underwhelming and badly spelled, but it's still our origin story.
It's very underwhelming indeed. And then I sent an email moments later, about an hour later, saying, hey there, we're actually in Soho today, right now. If you have some time, call me on 0745 various numbers, Chris. And that was just so lucky that you emailed us on that day while we were literally two blocks away from you. Any other time, any other day, wouldn't have happened. So I call that fate, and I call that destiny.
I think you had one eye on the future, though, Chris, in many ways. There was something deep inside you that thought, this is a good idea. I need to talk to this man, because I know for a fact you get a lot of offers. People arriving in Japan, people arrive wherever you are, basically, people will want to be going to have a drink with you, because to a lesser extent, it happens to me too. But when you're on holiday, you've got things to do, so you're sort of running around. So if you find yourself in Fukuoka, and you mention that you're on Fukuoka on the podcast, a week away from when you actually were in Fukuoka, you'll always get a message from someone going, I live in Fukuoka, let's hang out, let's have a drink. But it's just like, you've only got 2 weeks to get everything done that you need to get done anyway. So it's kind of hard to kind of swing that. So for you to take up the opportunity of a lifetime to appear on a 10 p.m. Monday to Thursday radio show in London, playing the best middle-of-the-road rock music, you really did grab the bull by the horns, the opportunity, so to speak.
I thought it was bloody lucky. I really did, because it was a nice little scene to slot into the documentary. It made it feel more credible, having a mainstream radio show.
Natsuki was even more frightening than I thought he would be. So
threatening? I remember actually... Oh, frightening. I remember in the run-up to meeting you, after that email, I think we decided to meet 2 hours later, and we were in the middle of London, and I said, I need to change. I look like crap. And I actually went and bought a really nice new shirt just to go and meet you and to film that scene. So that is the kind of effort I put in those early days.
And I don't think you had an English phone number that you could use WhatsApp on. So I think that's what we were using. And I think the second time next time you were in London, we went for a drink, got absolutely... do not mind admitting, and went. I think we went for. Did we go to the Borderline or something? The indie nightclub that's not there anymore
in London
that closed. And I took like loads of pictures of you dancing and your friend spilling beer everywhere. I sent it via WhatsApp to what I thought was your WhatsApp number, because we always communicate via line or email, don't we?
We do,
or a smoke signal or pigeon carrier, but we. But I sent a picture of you dancing to the number that you gave me in the first instance that I thought was your number. It wasn't your number. It was your friend's number. And then you were wondering why I was sending pictures of you having a dance to somebody that was just your mate, basically, who'd come over the first time. It was all very confusing. And it took me about a good hour to figure out what the hell was going on. I felt so bad. I was like, I've not been... taking pictures of you, Chris, and sending them to people I don't know. I was sending them to you, for crying out loud, but you just gave me a funky number.
Nothing short of a diplomatic incident. I was all right. Rather bizarre, to be honest. Why is Pete Donaldson, a guy I barely know, sending random pictures of me to my friends dancing like a drunkard? Luckily, we now know that's not the sort of thing Pete would do, but I thought it might be at the time. But there you go. That's a nice story, though. I do like it how we did meet. I think it's quite a cool little story. It tells you to take the bull by the horns, so to speak, and take every opportunity that comes at you.
Grab every opportunity. And then this has been an opportunity. It doesn't feel like an opportunity some Wednesday mornings, some Tuesday mornings. But it's like sort of dipping into your email account and just finding a load of old emails from like, your ex, and it's a bit like, oh, it's a bit uncomfortable, don't like reading these. I found a load of birthday cards from my ex from her 30th birthday recently when I was tidying up.
Right.
Now, she's approaching 40. Should I send them? Because I shouldn't have them. They're just all her friends saying, happy birthday, happy 30th, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, I don't need these and I can't throw them away. So what do I do with them?
Burn them. Burn them all.
I'm going to send them to your friend.
Yeah, I remember doing a similar thing though. I've still got things locked away in a cupboard from a previous relationship. Anyway, there you go. Take the bull by the horns. That's the moral of the start of this podcast, ladies and gentlemen. And do go back and watch Natsuki the movie and relive the magic of the time we met, which is all on camera. And the opening scene of Natsuki the movie as well. Good times. Loved it. News. What's going on in Japan this week, Mr. Donaldson? What have you seen? What have you heard?
I've heard there's a certain, I'm sort of doing like a kind of tabloidy wicked whisper. I've heard that a certain tall boy is closed for business in 2020. Will that do? Will that work?
Yeah, that'll work. I suppose, do you know what you call Mount Fuji in Japanese? What, how you would say?
Oh, Fujiyama. So Yama, what?
No.
Fuji-san. Fuji-san.
Oui, good. Fuji-san. So that is a Japanese name, so I suppose you could call it a tall boy. And that was speedy Japanese for this week, done, sorted. Fuji-san. Any mountain in Japan, you can tag san on afterwards. San literally means mountain, right? It's tagged on with any word. So any mountain, say a mountain, add san, you've got it. Like I live near Chōkai, Mount Chōkai, so Chōkai-san. Or Haguro, Haguro Mountain.
So it's kind of like the personification of like the Yama bit. It's just sort of like, yeah, it's a guy. Yeah, you know, the big guy. He looks over Tokyo. Yeah, he's a big guy.
Pretty much. There you go. Yeah. You can read the kanji for Yama, the kind of three lines pointing upwards. You can read that as San. So same word, but obviously in a sentence, really? It's Yama and tagged on after the name of the mountain, it's San. So
interesting.
Knowledge. But yeah, Mount Fuji sadly closed this year. I was looking forward to I was strongly considering
this. You're a Shut disgrace. Up. As soon as it's closed, I really needed to be in there.
I was gonna do it. I'm currently the fittest I've ever been in a year, and I thought it'd be a great time to climb it as a result, but now it's closed, can't do it until 2021. Oh no, woe betide. But the reason they closed it obviously is because of a certain virus, which shall not be named. But you might think, why would they close a mountain, right? Given it's a bloody mountain. It's not the sort of place you traditionally associate with closed, cramped conditions, a place where viruses can breed. But for those of you that climb Mount Fuji, you'll know that it does create the nastiest human traffic jams. Because the climbing season's quite short, it's from July 10th, to September 10th, typically. It means during that period, it gets phenomenally busy, particularly in August when I climbed it. And when you get towards the top of the mountain, you get stuck in a queue for often hours at a time in close proximity to lots of other climbers. And so to stop that from being an issue this year, the two prefectures of which share Mount Fuji, two prefectures share it, Shizuoka Prefecture and Yamanashi Prefecture, they decided to close down all four hiking trails that lead to it for the duration of the year. So no one will be climbing it, unfortunately. And so you'll have to wait to 2021 for those of you that were considering climbing it. And I do know that there are a few of you that were considering it because we got some emails about it. So that's sad. We'll have to postpone our climb to next year, Pete. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I'll start at the top. You start at the bottom. We'll meet in the middle. We'll have an energy jelly.
To be fair, the last time I climbed it, energy jelly was a very big part of the climb. Without that, would have been game over. Absolute nightmare. But like one of the reasons I wanted to go back and do it is my previous video, which was the most successful Mount Fuji video on YouTube. It got buggered because I used some music I shouldn't have used, and now the whole video got taken down. So I want to kind of reclaim my title of having the best, biggest and best Mount Fuji video. Once more.
Do we know what the song was? I'm interested to hear what the song
was.
Yeah,
it was Rising by Yoshida Brothers, the kind of drum, taiko drumming and shamisen. And it's awkward because I think both my friends Charlotte and Norm Tokyo Lens know the Yoshida Brothers, and I was like, can you just let it go, tell them to talk to Sony or whoever it is, and just let it go.
I mean, I cannot imagine how difficult it would be as a recording artist to explain slash administer a pass on a purely algorithmic, nonsensical piece of shit of a copyright strike. But I thought, like, with videos, I thought it just, they didn't take them down. They just said, you're not making any money out of this. We're making all this money because you use a tiny bit of music.
Yeah, it depends on the song. Like, I think it's Sony. I can't remember. I think it's Sony. They can basically ban some countries. So I think you can actually watch the Mount Fuji video in the UK and the US and Europe, but you can't watch it in Japan, which is where I am. So I can't actually watch my video.
Oh, so it's still rocking up the views. I could probably, I think I've seen it quite recently. But the thing with, the relationship between YouTube and music companies, it's a little bit further along than, well, it's very far along than certainly the podcast space. And people are under this kind of like very antiquated idea that you can somehow play 30 seconds of any piece of music in a podcast. That's legally not in any way true, but people just still keep on doing it. It's like the Wild West podcast. And the most disappointing thing is as a content provider, we are trying to be more responsible. Even though it's like the Wild West and everyone's just using whatever they want, we've got rival football podcasts, for example, that will play clips of rock music, clips of bands, and it really does add to the experience. But it's literally illegal. Yeah. Like, there's no license you can buy under the PRS laws of I don't know what PRS stands for, but it's basically like it gives a certain amount of your, you pay for a license, you tell them what you've played for, where it's going to, how many people have listened, and then they kind of portion out that money to the record companies. Let's make it very clear, it gets as far as the record companies, and the record companies probably just use it for their own nefarious means and not to the artist. But there is no license you can buy in the UK to play any kind of non-library or, you know, created music. So it's actually stimulating a lot of creativity in the podcast space. I hate to get to certainly all stuff, but in the weeds. But it is actually quite frustrating that there's been no sort of like a relationship between a podcast provider and a record company that would allow some kind of automatic working out of the of how the money is divvied up and stuff, because you know it'd be really good to do like a music show. There's no music podcast. There are no decent music podcasts because you can't play full tracks. You're not even allowed to play 30 seconds of tracks, but people just play fast and loose with the rules. And it will only take one record company to turn around and go, right, popular podcast, we'll have all your money, thank you.
Pretty much
retrospectively. So you got to be careful.
Dicey old market, and it's a tough one to crack. I completely sympathize. I mean, I had the same problem licensing music. I tried to get, which sounds ridiculous, I tried to get Rock the Casbah by The Clash for Natsuki the movie. And I got to the stage where I was speaking to someone at Universal Music about it. And I just thought, is this worth it? Because you need to get in touch with about four different companies and four different people to try and make it happen. Then the money would be considerable. It would dwarf the budget of the entire project just to get like 3 minutes of The Clash and Rock the Casbah. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a nightmare. And I realize we're getting a bit off topic, but yeah, it's a tough one. Even last week in my new video, I thought about using 5 seconds of a song. I think I was going to use 5 seconds of Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. And then I thought, no, probably not a good idea, because that could screw the whole video, bring it down and ruin everything. So it is a tough one. It is a tough one. But TikTok, you can do it. So get into TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's got, I think in the US, parody seems to be very strong. Like, oh, I've changed this slightly. I've used this brand for some reason, and I'm allowed to do it. But in the UK, it's completely different. And we are living in a globalized economy and globalized world. So people need to be a little bit more sensible about things like territory. So it's ridiculous that I can watch your Mount Fuji video and the creator in Japan cannot watch the Mount Fuji video. It seems very bizarre to me.
It doesn't make any sense. But speaking of responsibility, and that I recently read that Love Hotel business is booming in Japan because people are going and sneaking off to Love Hotels in the absence of being able to do anything else.
That's not social distancing.
Couldn't find any better way to slip that news article in there. But
slip it in there, Chris. Go on, slip it right
in there. While the pandemic is taking over, Love Hotels and Tenga are big winners. And for those of you who don't know what a Tenga is, Pete and I did discuss how to describe it best before doing the podcast, and I'll let Pete describe what a Tenga is. But it's a product that's been doing big business recently as a result of the pandemic. What is it, Pete?
It's a solo male love toy.
That works.
Yeah. No. It's a silicon-based onanist's aid, so to speak.
Brilliant. It is. And I've got a photo of you standing inside one in a Donkey Hall tent in Sapporo.
It wasn't an actual one, because that would be me in completely encased in a sausage-shaped silicon kind of chamber covered in lube. But that's not what was happening. In Japan, it just seems baffling that there's a mass market sex toy for men that is just so accepted. It's like the Apple of sex toys, but it's for men. Have you ever met a man from the West who's like admitted to owning a sex toy? Maybe they should. I don't know. But it's perverts. It's love dolls. It's sex dolls. It's parts of the body that you just, you know, go away at, so to speak. It's not like something that anyone would ever admit to. But in Japan, they're almost like, you just see them in like convenience stores and stuff.
It's amazing. It really is quite a miracle, to be honest, that such a thing exists. I remember when I first discovered it, on the shelves of just like a convenience store, like next to the food aisle. They're everywhere. I was like, what is that? My friend was like, oh, that's a sex toy that you can just buy and everyone knows it. And it's just you're so widely used, so widely popular. It's become this kind of trendy, fun brand. It's kind of playful. It's next to like the children's fucking section in like shops like Don Quixote. I can't believe it. And you won't either when you come and see it. It's surreal. It really is. But it's no surprise, given the situation, that sales are booming. You know, people are, if you go in a shop at the moment, they're quite hard to see on the shelf. Not that I would know. Don't really like or use them. But like, yeah, the shelves are empty when it comes to Tengas. Meantime, love hotels are booming. If you look at just a few weeks ago, it was the kind of term love hotels was trending on like Twitter, because people were just trying to do things in Golden Week, because Golden Week, Japan's biggest holiday where people usually travel and do things, was more or less cancelled. And so presumably couples thought, let's go to a love hotel instead and have our own little mini holiday in a nice little room. So bad.
Our annual sexual congress.
Exactly. The love hotel staffers are kind of worn out from having so many customers come in, that these places are so full. So it's quite interesting, the kind of economic effect and how things knock on like this, that who'd have thought that love hotels and Tenga are big winners out of the coronavirus, while Mount Fuji is not a big winner.
Well, look, I'm just saying, guys, during Golden Week and during a time where you are kind of locked down with your partner, maybe consider sticking on the Abroad Japan podcast while you're in the middle of it. So let our soothing voices bring you to fruition.
Disgraceful. But just quickly going back to Mount Fuji, it will be reopened next year, guys. So if you
don't want to do it on Mount Fuji, mate.
Don't use a Tengra on Mount Fuji either.
As the sun rises and 1,000 Chinese tourists stand behind you, you pump away at a Tenga. Land of the rising sun across Tokyo.
What a provocative image, but brilliant.
Fuji-san, you've really witnessed something. And then when you're finished, you just throw it off the top of the mountain. Literally.
Rolling. A sea of Tengas rolling down the side of Mount Fuji. Some evocative imagery there. The sort of evocative, really wonderful imagery you'd come to expect from the Abroad in Japan podcast.
It's like cheese rolling.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the ivory tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Petersen went to Spielberg and went, yeah, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E-T, mate. I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
As we quickly escape from this topic, let's now turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week, Mr. Donaldson, in the fax machine?
I wasn't ready. I didn't have my iPad. I've got a bought a little iPad, you know what, just for this bloody show. And it was £200, and right. I wasn't ready, but now I am ready.
Excellent.
Hey, it's Christian from LA. I'm a huge fan of you guys, and I typically listen to the podcast while working at a brewery as a beer chemist / microbiologist.
Wow.
Do you reckon Chris has got a lovely beard with a little moustache that he sort of twiddles around with, some moustache wax? It kind of sounds like that. I don't know. It just kind of sounds like that. He's got a lot of tattoos. And now a question for Chris and the Coolish Crusader himself. If you guys had the opportunity to open a foreign restaurant in Japan, what kind of restaurant would it be and which city would you open it in? Keep the good work and you guys rock. Christian, bless you.
Ooh, it's quite a good one. I would say a burger restaurant because Japan lacks any good burgers or decent burger chains. Actually, that's a lie. We do have some Shake Shacks popping up in Tokyo.
Really?
But yeah, there's no Five Guys. There's no In-N-Out Burger. Moss Burger's all right, but it's just not the same as a proper juicy Western American style burger. So I'd say a burger restaurant chain. How about you?
I think nowadays, though, burgers are getting too, they're getting too juicy. It's like
getting
a nightmare.
Too juicy?
Burgers are just getting too juicy and
getting
and
too delicious.
It's just getting too bit like it's getting to the point where I am seriously considering using a knife and fork. It's just it's and like it's helped slightly if you have like an Impossible Burger because they're a little smaller, like a fake meat burger because they are naturally not as plump and juicy. So you do get a little bit. You do get a little bit more purchase. That's all. Remember that Japanese bloke who came up with the perfect way to hold a burger? It was like a few years ago. He did loads of tests on how to maintain the structural integrity of a massive burger. And he had this technique where he used his little finger to cradle the back of the burger, meaning that everything doesn't fall out the back. It was just this whole big thing. And he ran all of these tests and stuff. And he came up with the perfect way to hold a burger. So there's some burger ingenuity going on in there in Japan, just not in Moss Burger.
Well, that's pretty cool. You could build an entire burger chain around that concept, call it like Burger Hands, and it teaches you the concept of holding the burger in place to maximize like enjoyment.
Just like a massive burger. I would probably, I've seen in Harajuku, people queue around the block for like really pedestrian popcorn. Really pedestrian popcorn from Pete. Really pedestrian, like really sort of dull looking popcorn. So, and there's loads of crepe shops and stuff, and people really are into crepes and candy and stuff. So, but I do think corner of Yoyogi Park and Harajuku, you know those roasts in a Yorkshire pudding wrap. It's like a roast, like in Britain, our kind of Sunday roast. The gravy, the chicken, the Yorkshire pudding, the potatoes, the stuffing, all that, you know, all that good stuff that you get in a roast. You get in a wrap, but instead of having like a bread wrap, like a bread kind of like a roll, the actual bread to maintain the aforementioned structural integrity is Yorkshire pudding. So they basically made a Yorkshire pudding, wrapped up a whole, well, near like a half a roast dinner, and kind of made like a burrito out of it, and like you eat it. It's very greasy, but my God, it tastes good. So I would sort of set up like a British Yorkshire pudding roll restaurant. And people would just be covering all the lampposts around Yoyogi Park and all the trees in grease. It would be the greasiest park in the whole of Japan. It would be fantastic.
I hate to say it, but that wouldn't do well. We know how Japanese people view British cuisine in general. I think a sloppy Yorkshire pudding, batter with gravy wrapped around some chicken, it just wouldn't go down well. They'd just be like horrified by the fact it looks visually appalling, even if it does. Yeah, but like, tastes great, doesn't matter.
Yeah, but like, all right, but they're obsessed with the French, so just pretend it's like French, kind of like a fancy French crepe or something. They'd be bang up for it.
Brilliant. So there we go. Burger Hands and Yorkshire pudding. What are you going to call your brand? This incredible chain. Pete's chain.
A greasy boy. Get yourself a greasy boy.
Greasy boy and Burger Hands. Job done. There you go. Hope that fulfills your question, Christian. You've got one here from Vanessa. It says, hello, Chris and Pete. Both of you are great. Thank you for being the best and influencing my big trip to Japan last year. I had lots of fun based on your videos. I could go on, but I think it'll be better served to get into the good stuff. Since tattoos and onsen are a common inquiry, I thought I would share my experience. While staying in Osaka, I went on a guided hike over Mount Rokko into a small hot spring town called Arima. This was the most difficult hike I've probably ever gone on, with brutal humidity and lots of rock climbing, plus billions of stairs, billions of stairs. The hike was to end with an onsen, a good old hot spring soak in Arima. The tour guide insisted that the hot spring was tattoo friendly. I've always wanted to go to an onsen, but I have fairly prominent tattoos, particularly my newest, which is a large rendition of my family crest containing a swan with an arrow piercing its heart on my chest. Well, that's pretty cool.
Wow. That's a brutal family quest, isn't it?
I've heard stories of people getting kicked out of even supposedly tattoo-friendly hot springs. And let's face it, if I was ordered to nakedly do the walk of shame out of there, I would have been mortified beyond belief. To top it off, my hiking companions were both male, so I was going in alone. I was seemingly the only non-Japanese woman in there, so that did not help with my nervousness, but my tired body needed it, so I went for it. On my way into the bath, after nervously disrobing, an older-looking janitor lady stopped me and said, and I thought, oh God, no, this is it. As it turned out, all she wanted to do was give me a hair tie. Another problem emerged. I'm pretty much blind without my glasses, and I couldn't really wear them in the bath. It turned out not to be a problem, though, as I realised that when you can't see people, it's much easier to pretend that they're not there. So I soothed my aching bones in the tub, disassociating everyone while they ignored the slightly overweight tattooed gaijin and gave me lots of space. Overall, it was a very nice time. Please keep up the fantastic work, guys. Lots of love from Vanessa. There you go, folks. Don't worry about going into an onsen with a tattoo, just as long as you don't wear glasses. What do you think Pete?
I mean, Vanessa sounds brilliant. Just like it is a sort of like a great sort of lesson for life. If you're a bit nervous or a bit anxious, just close your eyes. No one can see you then. No one can see you. I love it.
Flawless.
I got a lot of time strategy. For that. Well, I was watching. Oh, sorry, Chris. Carry on, mate. Well, we are miles away, so the latency is occasionally a little bit problematic. If you've been listening to any podcast in the last 2 months, everyone's recording remotely, and everyone's having problems and kind of like anxiety about talking over each other. We've been doing this for 3 years, mate, so
we know how
to deal with it. And we, Chris is on the other side of the world. Chris is miles away,
sitting here. Drinking my Zone energy drink. Now, what I was going to say is, I mean, we've seen a lot of people ring in, or not ring in, drop into the fax machine concerned about hot springs and tattoos. And it seems to be the issue is improving. They seem to be more open-minded to folks coming in with tattoos. I don't know why. I think it's mainly because of the Olympics, right? The Olympics, a lot of places wanted to prepare for foreign tourists, and lots of people have tattoos, including yourself, Pete. I know Pete and I went in, I think we went in two onsen. I don't remember the one we went in. Was there a sign saying no tattoos? Do you remember? I can't recall.
The one that me and you went into said no. I didn't see any saying no tattoos. But as I said, that old man sat down and there was blood. He left a puddle of blood on the seat. So I mean, you know,
your tattoos aren't so bad.
If that's the worst thing, if I'm the worst thing about that onsen, he must be up there as well, for crying out loud.
Yeah, tattoo of Guy Brush Threepwood. That's not that bad, is it?
It's actually the ghost pirate Luchuk. So have some respect for Monkey Island.
I don't remember it. I was like five when it came out. Anyway, what were you going to say before I cut you off?
I'm so young. I'm 30. I can't remember now. Tattoos. Hey. Yeah. We do get, I think if we sort of cut up the whole email box, I'll level with you. I don't have access to it. Chris might have given me access a long time ago, but I've long since lost that login. But
the fax machine is mine, Dalton.
The fax machine is controlled solely by Chris. There's so many, like, people have such a kind of a big kind of like, they have a big love for tattoos, obviously, and a lot of the West is now tattooed. If you sort of asked this question 10 years ago, and like 20% of the questions you get in the fax machine box, I do think are mainly sort of tattoo based. It's really, really bizarre. People seem very anxious about their tattoos. Do not worry about it. Charlotte, your mate Charlotte, was doing a video, Chris, about, I think it was just a question answer thing. I was just watching idly while I was cooking my dinner. And actively. I was enthralled. But she was talking about there's a chain of kind of onsen hotels where you can kind of upgrade and have your own onsen in your own room, which is just like insane. I would be just like a prune. I wouldn't use the bed. I would sleep in the onsen. It would be fantastic.
Yeah, no, like a good, there's most ryokans, most traditional Japanese inns do have a room with like a private bath, like a decent sized bath. I've stayed at a few. You can get them for $300 a night sometimes. Usually they're more than that. But if you come to Japan for like a week or two, do it one night. If you can spare the change, do it one night and you won't regret it, having your own private bath with a good view. And you get some really good ones, like the ones with views over the aforementioned Mount Fuji. But there you go. Thank you for your story, Vanessa. Good one. What we got from Jay, Mr. Dawson?
We got an email from Jay. I am filling for time as I open my iPad. Good day, Chris and Pete. My name is Jay and I live in New Zealand. I've been fascinated by Japan since high school and managed to go there for the first time last year, November, with my brother and had an absolute blast. Managed to spot a lot of abroad Japan hotspots like Yaru Ramen in Akihabara, and Amerikamura in Osaka. I've been self-studying Japanese for a while, and I feel I can hold a basic conversation. And for my next trip to Japan, my iPad, Chris, has gone funny. And for my next trip to Japan, I would love to interact more with the locals. My question is, what are some good ways to approach locals as a foreigner with limited Japanese skills? Cheers, lads. Jay. I mean, obviously, your Japanese is excellent, Chris. Mine is not. I enchanted a man in Kumamoto, I think, this year with a picture of me dressed as Goro Majima, a character from the Yakuza series. He could not have been happier. He rang his friend, who was English, I think, who spoke to me on the phone for 5 minutes. Not really sure what that was about. And then everyone in the bar added me on Facebook.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Just show a picture of you dressed in cosplay and they seem to sort of really respect you. I don't know.
If you come to Japan for 2 weeks, by the time you leave, you will have an extra 200 Facebook friends because here they love it. Little bit of conversation, a 50-second conversation, and it'll usually end with, can I add you on Facebook? And you're like, yeah, because you have to be nice about it. You can't be like, no, you can't. I'm very careful about who I add on Facebook. You have to just sort of say yes. So whenever I travel, I always come back with like a few hundred new Facebook friends. So it's a bit awkward because later on down the line, you just don't know who they are or where they've come from. and that's what my Facebook is like today. But
it's like, just like my... people were like babies and stuff, and you're like, someone's had a baby. I have no idea.
Yeah, who is that?
I have no idea. I think he was the bar manager in a bar in Yokohama or something.
I mean, my advice, just go up. And I always find people here don't make the first move. Have you found that, Pete? People are a bit reluctant. Unless you're in a bar, in which case anything happens. But other than that, it's quite hard. It's quite uncommon for people to make the first move, particularly in Tohoku, where they're pretty damn shy compared to Osaka or Kagoshima, where they're a lot more friendly, down to earth and open. But in Tohoku, they're very shy. But if you have a little bit of conversation, if you just sort of start the conversation, get the ball rolling, then they're very open and friendly and awesome. And so you've just got to say something like, I don't know, hello, I'm Chris from England, Harry Potter. Yeah, I don't know. Just start saying something and magic will happen, as you found out, Pete.
Big smile. Just say, yeah, big smile. Be, you know, very sort of open and kind of, you know, even if you're not that, in reinvent yourself for the duration of your trip, maybe.
Perfect. There you go. No Japanese required. Got one from Paul. It says, hey, Chris and Pete, my question is, what's an inconvenience you find endearing that only exists in Japan? Best regards, Paul. That's a tough one, because I don't find anything inconvenient endearing. Do you find anything inconvenient endearing? You definitely do.
Just things like, I mean, just filling in forms for everything. So just the very, just people taking a lot of time to sort of do things, and just also the lack of bins everywhere.
Super convenient or super inconvenient here. Like,
yeah,
when it comes to the
there's
service,
no middle ground, is there?
There isn't. When it comes to like buying things or shopping, it's all very convenient and magical. But when it comes to living in Japan and doing various bureaucratic things like registering where you live or getting a new car, which I talked about at length a few weeks ago, everything's just so damn complicated. Like at the moment, every resident in Japan has been given 100,000 yen from the government to stimulate the economy because of a bloody virus that you'll already know about. And it's just like 100,000 yen, great. But I've got like an envelope and it's got like 25 documents and it's take half an hour to fill out and I've got to provide ID and all this weird crap. It just feels like, I don't know if I can be bothered. I think I'll just not get the 100 grand because I just can't be bothered because it's so much bloody effort. So no, nothing's endearing, nothing at all. And so that's the end of that question. We've got one here from Stanley in New Zealand who says, hello, Chris and Pete. I've enjoyed the Abroad Japan channel for over a year now. And I have a question for both of you legends. If the world of podcasting and radio and YouTubing were to stop tomorrow, what would you guys do for a career and a job? Keep up the great work. Stanley Long in New Zealand. What would you do, Pete? What would you do without podcasts?
I don't know. I mean, there's a little part of me that would just, if I just... I didn't co-own a company or have relationships here. I would just sod off to Japan and China for like half a year or something. I've never gone traveling, as you know. I'm from
proper
quite a working class background, Chris. So it was never an option for me to sort of, after I finished college, go traveling like a lot of people that I know now did. It was just never on the agenda. So like, I think to take a year out and potter around would be really cool. But I think
career,
you would
though,
start to go a little bit in stalker. No, it's not. No, well, a homeless person. I don't know. Just having a stroll around. I've got no hard skills, Chris. I'm a tinkerer. I potter around with little bits. I know a bit of Photoshop. I know a bit of After Effects. I can play five chords on the guitar. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing remarkable about me. I'd be fucked if I wasn't a podcaster.
No. I know what you could do. You could be a wedding host, like someone who hosts weddings, like the wedding singer.
Host.
Do that.
Yeah, but I did a speech at just a reading at my sister's wedding. And I don't know what it was, but the pressure just really got to me. Like I couldn't public. I'm usually pretty good at public speaking in that, like, I don't really care about what people think about me. And I think in any job, I think the best thing to be is like, just don't care about what people think about you, because you will be a bigger person and you'll just enjoy yourself a little bit more. But I think with, it's just in front of me, dad and me mum, I just kind of couldn't read properly. I'm not a natural performer, but if I'm doing if I'm hosting like an indie gig or something, and I'm introducing a band, I'm like, I don't care about people watching this shitty indie band. I'm not going to give a shit about their lives. I don't give a shit about his band. I'm getting paid £50 to do this.
You'd be great. You'd be a performer. You could be like one of the people that works at Disneyland, dress up as Donald Duck, walk around, be a bit funny and wacky.
We'll be I like the anonymity of like being like big. Anonymity. The amoeba. I like the anonymity. I can't say anonymity this morning. It's early, Chris. Christ. I've not had me jaw on the juice hot sandwich. I like the idea of like sort of going hello, like going up to kids and going doing like a Mickey voice, going hello kids, hello, and then like getting really close to the fist and going I'm going to kill you, scaring them.
Bloody hell. Did I tell you about my first trip to Disneyland, Florida, when I was 9? I got some popcorn and I was walking around and I think what was it? Pluto the dog was there in a costume. And he came and stood next to me for a photo. We took the photo. While my family had their backs turned and they were looking at the photo, Pluto took my box of popcorn that I was holding and just walked off with it and disappeared. And that was it. My popcorn went. Scarred me for life, that did.
What a gag. Scarred. What a brilliant even gag. Now.
It wasn't a gag. I didn't get my popcorn back. He literally just went off with my popcorn. That's why I'm so bitter and sarcastic in everything I do, because I think about how Pluto took advantage of me as a 9-year-old child in Florida. So
sounds bad, that.
That's what I would do. If the world of YouTube were to collapse tomorrow, I'd go to Florida and wreak revenge on Pluto the dog in Disneyland, Orlando. Keep the stories, comments, questions coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week, folks, to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, stay safe, stay clean, and we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good one. Stay away from Pluto. Bastard.
Bye-bye.
A Stakhanov production.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.